practice. There's a new day, new opportunity to align our day with the cultivation of path factors to help generate the fruits, plant the seeds to generate the fruits of the practice. This establishing of mindfulness, this translation of the word sati, which has an idea of remembering, to regather, to reconnect, to align with that which even has at a subtle level the capacity to remember, this fundamental awareness of the heart. And bringing that into play. Kirisara mentioned this morning when he gave a beautiful introduction into the Kuan Yin Dharmas before the chanting and the recitation and the efficacy of the Great Compassion Mantra, that we take this heart, this conscious awareness, as unreal. And what we take as more real is the passing phenomena of our mental, emotional, habitual activity, what's seen, thought, felt, touched, tasted, smelt, heard. But the ground that enables us to recognize even what is happening, the ground of the heart, we don't actually acknowledge as having reality, and yet in truth it's the ground of all that is real, from which all emerges and into which all dissolves. So recognizing this conscious awareness as we align with the practice of mindful contemplation. Often the sati is married with the term sampajanya, sati sampajanya, which sampajanya is sometimes translated as wise reflection. So these two are connected. That innate within being mindful, there's already wisdom operating. Innate within wise reflection, there's an attentiveness, mindful attention, and inquiry to what is. So, for example, it's a bit like you driving a car. If you're just mindful, you're very, very attentive. Very attentive, I can feel my sensations on the hands on the wheel, sitting in the seat. But that mindfulness starts to exclude the global awareness of what's around you. And then you can be very mindful and still crash the car. Oh, but I was so mindful. I remember hearing in South Africa someone that overtook a car and had a crash. He was talking about he was very mindful of the lines on the road, but what he wasn't mindful of, and that he could cross, he could move out, but what he wasn't mindful of was that he was moving out into a curve. So this global awareness and mindfulness informed by wise consideration, what's the context, internally and externally, as information to help adjust our mindful relationship to what is. Mindful too, as we've been starting, to body and breath, to where the Buddha begins, that which is with us all the time, that we're awake in our waking life. Establishing this mindful attention, sometimes it's translated in the suttas in front of us, which is a strange translation, but it means really as a priority. We make that as primary. Usually we make the pressing narratives that are internal narratives that need attending to as primary, but making primary our intention to keep returning to embodied awareness. How is it now? How is the body? now. So we don't just sort of slap on top of what's happening this technique, you know, just start doing some technique without really considering what's the context? How does the body feel? What's the mood like? What adjustments need to be made? Are you feeling upset? Do you need to soften and have some kindness? Are you feeling distracted? Do you need to actually increase the energy, be a bit more focused? Are you feeling dull and sleepy and just wandering off? Do you perhaps need just to open your eyes and straighten your spine a little? Are you feeling tight and uptight? You need to soften on the out-breath, soften the belly, soften the jaw. So the mindfulness is informing adjustment, adjusting. Placing that as priority, adjusting and being with breathing. So we've been reflecting the long breath, the short breath, following the whole of the breath. The short breath sometimes just the attention rests at a place within the breath body. All that is moving, the vayo dhatu, the movement element, is all breath body, vibrational field. It's all connected with the air element. So maybe the attention rests part of the breath body, the actual subtle sensation of breath in a particular area of the body, or just a sensation. You could call that the short breath. And you can move between the two, adjusting. The mind's quite calm, and it tends to go, you just don't need to follow the whole pathway of the breath. Or maybe there's more distraction and agitation. You can follow the whole pathway of the breath, even deepen deliberately some of the inhalations. So you feel the breath in the body. Actually, it's quite advisable to do when you're starting a sitting practice, taking some deep, slow, deliberate breaths, filling the body with breath energy. Breathing, and then as the training goes, experiencing the whole body and calming, soothing. This practice soothing, calming the mental, emotional, and physical body. It's one of the fruits of just applying this presence to how it is. Just necessary, as said in the sutta, just bare attention enough, necessary to know here is a body, this is a body. You don't even have to go, my body. That gets a bit complicated. This is a body breathing. And as it continues with the contemplation of not clinging to anything in the world, each out-breath, this patinisaga term that Kirisara used, giving back. The out-breath is leading us. It's release, let go. In-breath, out-breath. And Kirisara is naming some of the supports for this practice. This quality of attention that's both directing, using a thought to direct attention here, now, buddho, let go. And also the receptive, which is once we've brought attention, receiving how it is, what's felt, what's experienced, receiving the body in particular. In the ease, relaxing, softening the muscles, softening the belly, softening the shoulders, softening the palms of the hands, the soles of the feet. And then connecting with the savoring of what is felt, even if it appears at first as an unpleasant sensation, but suffusing the body with awareness, We can savor sensation, feeling. So it's the ground for this pitti, or the arising of pleasure, fullness, completeness. And learning when the thoughts are complex, busy, patterns as we start to practice more deeply in a retreat, we start to notice some of the deeper narratives that flood us. And some of them are very undermining and sabotaging, upsetting, connected with difficult feelings. So what we're doing in part is learning to go beneath that cognitive realm to what's felt, to stop going around and around in the thinking process. So just this training of attention to help us do this, using a thought, taking it from where it's stuck, where we're stuck in thoughts that are like the mind's energy going down, sometimes like where we are in South Africa or here, when there's a big rainstorm, the rain will go down the mountain and start to create a groove into the land. It's called a donga. And we have the dongas of the mind. The mind's energy will go down these pathways, and they're often connected with primary wounds, what's hurt us, the messaging that we got, unskillful messaging about who we are, generating a lot of affect in the emotional experience. So to be able to move the attention from those dongas to the training to what is wholesome. One breath. I was saying, like even counting those breaths on your fingers so that there's a practice that you can, 5 breaths, break the pattern, 5 breaths, breathing in, breathing out, 1 breath. Breathing in and breathing out. And so on, 5 breaths, and increase the breath to help. It's just these adjustments to shift out of the pull of a vortex of the thinking mind. Or you can consider, you've been down this pathway how many times? And where does it lead? And you say, well, it doesn't really lead to happiness, to well-being, to resolution. Generates more feeling of negativity or resentment, fear, anxiety. So we don't want to, when there's mindfulness, there's choice, to move from that by understanding the consequences of where we're dwelling and placing attention with that which is wholesome. Or the Buddha said, if those two don't work, just moving to the wholesome, contemplating the outcome of the unwholesome, he said just that the pattern is going, it's got too much energy in it, because we've invested energy over a long time. He said, just don't give it attention. You can't stop it. So it's just whirring away. But sort of like carve out in the midst of that mindfulness of body and breath. And you get pulled and you just keep coming back. But you're not, what's happening, you're not adding energy to it. Or even some inquiry. See, just to think, who's thinking this? It's so much me and my story and my issue and my agenda. It's not even questioned. And so who does this really belong to here? So there's strategies. It's not just like cling on to the breath and hold on like a snapping turtle and hope magically something will kind of explode apart and then there'll be bliss. This is a practice, like, you know, the Buddha talks about these images like honing wood or as a craftsperson, you know, creating skill, working with the mind. It's a bit like that. You're working skillful me. What works? What adjustments? What? Some of them are quite subtle, but they're quite powerful. Opening the eyes when you're caught up in some story that's so flooded you don't even know you're sitting in a meditation room. It's Spirit Rock. You're in some other place, some mind realm. But more powerful when we're dealing with particularly obsessive cognitive processes, that there's a lot of what can come up for us when they're connected with wounding, early patterning, deeply learnt emotional shaping of the shapes the sense of self. Is to actually go, this is where the meditation on body, to go beneath the cognitive. Yes, that's happening. What's felt in the body, in this dynamic? Because what is felt is very powerful for us. And the Buddha in the Second Foundation talks a lot about, actually doesn't talk a lot, it's very, very succinct. Just know the feeling in the feeling. Very simple, actually. Feeling isn't so simple. It's very activating, especially when it goes into a full-blown emotional experience and colours the mind and triggers deeper issues, learnt emotions that sabotage, diminish the sense of well-being. The Buddha just said this, to know the feeling in the feeling. There's just feeling here. We can go into the story, look at the content. That is one journey, but for this practice right now, we're looking at the construct. Is it painful? Is it painful? No. Is it unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral? So you can bring awareness to what's felt in the body, particularly say in the core of the body, the trunk of the body, sometimes called the felt sense area. And just note, without going into the story of why am I feeling this, where does it come from, what am I going to do about it? You say, is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? You just say it's painful feeling. You might even have a word, it's sadness, it's irritation, it's grief, it's, you know, you might have a word, but even before the word, you just say it is just feeling. And what is so powerful is, as we understand, bringing mindful attention, that mindful attention is connected with the intelligence, the deep, deep and profound intelligence of the citta, of the fundamental nature of the heart, which is awareness, intelligent knowing. And when that comes into play in relationship to whatever attention is brought to, there is a transmutation, there is an alchemical affect that is quickened. And the fundamental nature of that intelligence is to heal and to realign and to correct what has been out of alignment, what is constricted, what is repressed, what is held down. And so the very simple activity in our practice today, as we start to bring attention, feel into the body, the breath, stabilize, noticing what are we working with, how is it? Mind states, feeling tones, body experience. That the power of awareness in and of itself that is amplified as we hold attention within our embodied experience becomes more potent. And particularly when it's brought to the Vedana, the feeling experience, it actually transmutes the energetics of the body, of the heart and of the mind, realigns, reconfigures. This is really one of the powers of the practice, of samadhi, of gatheredness, of mindful attention. It's not you doing it from the place that we do stuff from. It's an innate aspect of the dynamic aspect of wise reflection, of awareness. So wherever we are today, whatever's unfolding for us, some may be very peaceful, very light, and that can change, can crash. Some may be some very sankharas and patternings that are coming up that are quite challenging, very familiar, very old, very persistent. Some of the different hindrances are coming. Whatever it is, whatever, it's all part of our practice. There's nothing outside the practice. It's not, it can be the most horrific, devilish kind of state that we're with. You think, oh, I'm not a spiritual person. You know, as is said, that this is, I think again by Einstein, but I'm a bit nervous to quote, but you know, that this is awakening is not about imagining figurines, idealizing the figurines of the light, but actually illuminating what's in the shadow. You know, so we're illuminating what is yet unhealed, what is yet stuck, what is yet to be released. That is patient, swopaha, shvaha. Yes, it's like this, but also that it's like this, needing a lot of patience, kindness, softening, allowing, returning again and again to how it is, moment by moment. This is the application of the path, and it will bear fruit. So finding a posture you feel comfortable in. Adjusting if you need to. You can always adjust the posture. You're not stuck, you know, pinned down. Just feel like you have that agency to move and adjust. So maintain a sense of well-being, comfort, support. You might want to begin by just taking a few slow and deepening breaths. So you really feel the breath energy suffusing through the whole body. Right down into the belly, to the soles of the feet, the palms of the hands, up into the brain. You might even feel the tingling of that inhalation, full inhalation. And as you exhale, that softening through the jaw, the shoulders, the belly, palms of the hands, down to the soles of the feet. So letting the ground support. We're establishing mindful awareness. How is it now? What are you present with? In the body, in the heart, in the feeling tones, mental activity, just noticing what's here first. Maybe inquiring what's needed, what would be supportive, maybe some subtle adjustment, some attitude, a bit more energy, a bit more softening, some sense of kindness and openness, softness, or maybe something more yang, more focused, more deliberate. It's getting a feeling of what would be need, what is needed as you begin to move into a practice with how it is, what you're experiencing. You can ask that throughout the day from time to time. What is needed here? So you don't need too much effort, you don't need an abdication of any intention to be present, and just wafting off. So just feeling into a sense of that balanced, a balance, just enough presence to feel and be continuing with the body breath. So it's a relaxed ease, as well as an interest. You might just find an area if you're following the breath, or you might find an area where the attention settles if there is a lot of intense feeling tone. And that's uncomfortable to be with. You can go to the edges of it or to a more neutral part of the body. You can move in and out of what is felt. The core of what is felt can be sometimes very intense. You stay there for a while and then you can move out, say, to the sensation in the palms or the feet or the pressure of the sitting. So there's agency, there's choice, there's movement there. Feeling of being not being just stuck to painful feeling, being able to work in and out of it. And also mention if you're very distracted, restless or dull. You can also just take up that practice of just 5 mindful breaths. Touch your fingertips as you go through each breath, giving yourself a small goal. The mind likes that, actually. Likes to have something to aim for and to succeed at. And then start again. Just in a soft way, not in an obsessive, willful way. Just in a more playful way. So these are just adjustments for you to explore as you primarily are rooted in the ground of the heart, awareness within body, body within awareness, body, mind and heart. So is there time if there's any questions about... Yes. Well, I think that's a very good question. The question is that you had very violent nightmares, and how to use the practice in response to the terror from the outside, what's happening in the outside world. Of course, the outside and the inside are so porous, and what we're doing here right now is creating a sanctuary so that one can gather some capacity to meet the outside world. And, you know, what the outside world is, you know, it's very impingeful and impactful, and it's very real in its affect, and has very real consequences. But right now, on an internal level, we're looking at what world is, you know, how it's generated through perception and memory and feeling. And the best ability to... Yes, there's an affect from the impingement from the world and what that triggers for us historically, ancestrally, collectively. These are very real, energetic experiences that are lived within our body, so we can get triggered by something that can ripple into some very deep material that gets activated and is felt as terror, as overwhelm. But what we're learning right now is to cultivate the capacity to meet that, you know, cultivate capacity, whether it is something that triggers and generates this overwhelm, and it comes through our dream consciousness, and has an affect from that, are actually also preparing, like Ajahn Chah would say, practice is preparation for when the real challenges hit, you know, for when we meet, you know, a world in crisis, you know, it's a profound crisis, and all the affects of that. And, you know, just what we've been doing is really the skillful means to cultivate that capacity. And, you know, to actually keep going to the world and the problems in it, is a bit like taking the tongue to the tooth. It sort of, that's painful, it exacerbates the pain. You know, we're trying to go to the dentist and figure out how to remedy the tooth internally first so that one can recognize how to work and withstand. I mean, some of the samadhi practice, the Buddha said that you actually won't be able to cultivate samadhi unless you're able to withstand the impingement of the senses. So there's a certain withstanding of what is unpleasant, you know, that is implied in this practice. And so cultivating steadiness, mindfulness, samadhi, wise reflection, that mind, when that's brought to the world, is going to be much more effective, much more able to negotiate what is happening than a mind that's fractured and caught up in the reactivity around what we're experiencing. So I think really you just keep going and trust what you're doing. It doesn't seem very dramatic. It's more dramatic when we go out on the front lines and get on the streets, you know, but this is working at a deeper level of consciousness, which also affects profound changes, and where change ultimately really also happens. You know, so that to trust that this is enough at right now is where you've been brought. And also for those that are very involved in the world and what's happening, and it's all of us to some degree or another, to realize we also need to recoup. We need permission to say it's okay. You know, like if you're a general, you don't always have your troops on the front lines. Sometimes you have to retreat, and it's very smart to retreat. And so you recoup, regather, re-strengthen, heal, rest. You know, otherwise one's always in a hyperactivated state, you know, and pulled out of the parasympathetic nervous system You're always sort of in this activity-reactive mode and you can't rest, digest, settle. So I know a lot of you, and all of you in some way or another, you know, it's very challenging times, we're all impacted, but I think, and it does come through our dreams, it comes through what we feel, it comes through the body. The body's an earth body, it's feeling what's happening at very deep levels. So it's felt as feeling, and also as the teachings help us not to overly personalize everything. You know, this is a collective affect, and then we go, it's all me. It's not actually, a lot of it's what's happening. We're wired into a systems, we're wired into a web of life, and this is a very sensitive body and attuned to all of that. So, you know, the best place of rest is, you know, the only place really to come to is mindfulness. Mindful refuge, mindful cultivation of mindful rise reflection, cultivation of samadhi and steadiness, allowing the processes that are going through the body, mind and heart that are painful to be digested and metabolized. I think Kittisar used that word. Samadhi is a metabolization of the dukkha. So trust it, just as it takes a bit of time and patience, but it's effective. Yes. Have I personally experienced samadhi or enlightenment? I've given up on enlightenment. I'm joking, partly joking. It's the word. I think it's kind of very, you know, what do you mean? What do we mean by that word? We've all experienced some samadhi. Also, what's meant by that? I know in some traditions, in some ways it's held, it's meant as sort of in a very deep, you know, unmoving state, you know, that you sort of read about the saints that would sit there and not move for 10 days or something. So there's a ways of talking about samadhi that can make it completely unreachable for us. But Ajahn Chah, our teacher, who he said, really, you know, for this practice of awakening, you need enough samadhi, you need as much samadhi as you would need to read a book. You're reading the book of your heart. So enough gatheredness, you have enough gatheredness, the practice starts. And as the practice starts, the and the digestion and the, of the dukkha and everything that we've just talked about, the samadhi increases, the gatheredness increases and deepens. So yeah, we've all experienced some level of samadhi. We've all experienced some level of awakenings. You know, in the Theravada map and then in the Mahayana map, there's different, you can experience profound awakening, what's called stream entry, which is the taste of the unconstructed Dhamma, the Ammata Dhamma, the deathless Dhamma. That's very realizable as a direct, immediate taste of the unmoving peace. But that doesn't mean to say you're finished, and there's a real confusion around that, you know, that there's still, that's called one first level of awakening. And then there's still greed and delusion that's operating, the hindrances are operating. And then as that deepens and the hindrances lessen and are purified all the way to what's called arahant, then there's a very subtle level of hindrance, a subtle restlessness, subtle sense of self-conceit that still needs to be purified, subtle ignorance. And then in the Mahayana, there's this, you know, in some ways that's the end, but it's also another beginning. There's the bodhisattva, the bodhicitta, there's the taking that and being a bodhi, awakened being, bodhisattva in the world. So there's these different ways of placing the awakening process that enables us to be more realistic and manageable as to what it actually means and what the subtleties are in it, not just like one blowout enlightenment experience and it's done. Because you know, that's what sometimes happens. People have those experiences and then they put their flag up and then realize down the road that there were lots of undigested shadow issues that come into play and get actually intensified and projected. And then we have the sort of fallen guru syndrome, which we know so well. So it's partly because we didn't understand the actual process of awakening is a process. There is the momentary, like Zen thing, but it's also a process. Because enlightenment, awakening is always here and now, so it's, you're not going to get it and attain it. It's nothing to attain, it's to recognize. But then there's still a process of deepening and stabilizing that recognition. And then the subtle purification and transformation of the hindrance. Yes, sir? Yes.
There's just this experience.
Yeah.
I'm engaged or interacting with whatever it is that arises, but I'm not thinking about or planning or problem solving. So the irony for me is that there are times when I find myself in a flow, like it's a flow state.
Yes.
Where there isn't a personal self that's observing or being with. But
yes.
It's
Yeah.
To be in that. Yeah. Love to hear you talk about that.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's a great question again as well. It's Ajahn Chah talked about we refer a lot to him because probably in my life he was one of the most awakened beings I've met, and I can't assume where he was at. Like he would say, it takes one to know one. That's why I can't assume where he was at, but. but he would sort of, again, the trajectory of the awakening process, he talked about the Dharma. First we hear about the Dharma, then we learn a bit about the Dharma, then we study the Dharma, then we practice the Dharma. But then there is being Dharma, where that sense of me doing it and it's happening and me even being mindfulness, it all starts to collapse into the actuality of what you call the flow, and one is just being Dharma. The Dharma's happening. It's not self, it's not other, there's a dynamic happening. And that is also, not to put that on a big pedestal, I mean, he said it's something not so easy to attain, I think, in the way he was understanding it, in again a more embodied and ongoing way. But we have moments when we experience that of anatta, of the dropping of the self, and then you just experience it as flow, and the Dhamma is the in a way you could say, I had that same feeling once when I worked at one point, I don't anymore, as a therapist, and I had the feeling of one session, I was like, oh, it's Kuan Yin attending to Kuan Yin, and Kuan Yin is sorting it out. It wasn't me or the client, it was just a process, and that is very, it's not, it's pleasurable, but it's also very revelatory and transformative and dynamic, and that is, that is part of an experience of awakening. It's not the awakening in big capitals, but it is when we experience the dropping of the objectifying mind, and it is deeply satisfying because it's like home base, So it's important, and just finish here, it's like, that we're talking about enlightenment and awakening. It's not to make it such a sort of impossible projection of the mind, but to notice it as it's being experienced. We notice dukkha. Another way that the Buddha talked about awakening is moments of non-suffering, non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion, just presence. And we actually have those moments every day. We just don't, it's boring. I'm not in a state of great kind of, some massive crisis. That's life, when I'm juggling with it all. And, it's like the peace. It's like, there's nothing here. It's because we haven't paid attention. So learning to pay attention to, and we'll explore this as we go on, as our Western teacher Ajahn Sumedho said, in London they have the underground, like the subway here or the BART. And when you step off, they go, mind the gap, mind the gap. So that was his thing, mind the gap. There's gaps, when the self isn't operating. It's just you're there, you're walking, it's nature's breath. It's just happening, and it's just seeing, it's hearing, it's direct experience. And that, you know, we just don't, that happens every day, we're just not really noticing it as something. So attuning to that too, as we practice today, attuning to the moments when actually it's okay. Maybe it's not profound earth-shaking enlightenment like the Zen stories, but it's okay. You know, relax, it's okay. You know, it's this peace. There's a sense of contentment, a sense of connection. So we're learning to track into this deeper abiding in the ground of the heart. 10 o'clock. Okay, so not to forget that those, some of you are continuing with our check-in groups, so check the board and make sure you're signed up. If you are signed up, make sure you get to the groups. Thank you so much.